For the fifth season, we hear that theme music. Meaning only one thing, you have wandered aimlessly into the steam room. Charles Barkley, Ernie Johnson at your service. So good to be back with y'all.
5 years?
Yeah, well, this is the fifth season.
Wow.
Episode one.
Well, we made it.
We made it to what?
Hey, to all you people who think we wasn't going to make it, up yours.
You think that many people are out there saying this will never make it?
Yes, there's always haters, Ernie. Yeah. There's always haters.
I don't think they even wasted the brain power to even think about whether the steam room would be around 5 years later.
Well, we made it. We're here.
Yeah, we certainly are. You look great, man.
Thank you, brother.
How much you weighing now?
I am 285.
Wow. What's the goal?
270.
Wow, you're almost here. What did you start at?
352.
Congratulations,
man. That was a fat ass, brother.
You're looking good.
Thank you, brother.
You're looking good.
Thank you, man. It's coming. I'm going to get to 270. I can't get to my plan weight, which there's no need for that, to 270.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was your plan weight, ideally?
250.
Nah, you ain't going to get there.
I'll tell you, if I get to
that would be unhealthy for you right now, Chuckster.
I don't know if it's unhealthy, but 270 is good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Shout out to Manjaro.
And the golf game's good?
Yeah. Oh, man. Hitting that thing. Beat Roy Green like a drum.
Are you really? Are you consistently beating these guys that used to
consistently
take
beat
you
Roy
to the
like
woodshed?
A drum. Roy and Brennan. I got Ahmad's on my hit list. I got to get him.
He's still beating you.
Yeah, Ahmad's a handful.
Yeah.
But that's okay. They've already peaked. Shout out to my boy Stan Utley, who saved my life. And, man, I'm excited to be back for the steam room. It's been an incredible summer. I'm excited about the NBA season. You know, we got a lot of storylines. You know, we finally got rid of the national nightmare known as the James Harden saga.
Yeah.
Thank God that's over. You know, living in Philadelphia during the summer, I tell people, if I had a dollar for every time somebody asked me about James Harden, I'd quit TNT.
Yeah, no kidding.
I'd be a billionaire. Like, yo, man, I don't know. I don't work for the Sixers. I know, but I'm so glad it's over.
Now a Clipper.
And the main thing is, you know what? You can't – sports are hard enough without a dark cloud hanging over a team. You know, so the Sixers, I'm glad it's over. They made the best deal. Now they can move forward.
Right.
And their two best players are the MVP and Tyrese Maxey.
I'll give you guys a little heads up that a little bit later in this show, Dusty Baker, the just retired former manager of the Houston Astros and others, and a marvelous big league career, will join us and tell us stories.
Is that the
and
understatement of
he is
that
tremendous.
An understatement? A great career,
yeah, legendary career.
I mean, that's like as a basketball player, you would be. I'm trying to think, because Phil Jackson's up there, one of the greatest coaches, but he wasn't a great player. Pat Riley is in that conversation, but he wasn't a great player.
Yeah.
So it's really hard to compare him to anybody who had that longevity. But
hey, what do you say we start this episode?
Yes.
A little differently.
Uh-oh.
With first of all, this is the way we start every episode of every season of the Steam Room. First of all,
you know, I got to say goodbye to some friends. A couple of people I know who I'm going to miss. This guy was a big friend of mine from Auburn's name was Dr. Sam Miller. He passed away a couple months ago. Just a great friend, great Auburn man, just nothing but admiration for him. And I'm going to miss Doc Miller, Sam Miller. Now, this guy was a good friend of mine, a professional golfer, gentle giant, Andy Bean.
Yeah.
One of the really true, I'd been doing a charity event with Andy for the last, I think, 12, 14.
That was the one in Birmingham, right?
No, it's the one in Florida.
Okay.
Yeah, the one in Florida. And man, when I heard he passed away, it hurt me because there's no better person to play golf with or talk about fishing. Andy would send me pictures because he went fishing basically every single day, but he was just such a good person. And he will be missed. So shout out and condolences to the Bean family, man. What a good man Andy was. Now, this guy's one of my favorite actors. His name is Ray Stevenson. He passed away and it was quiet. Nobody know, but you would know him if you saw his face. He was in a ton of movies. I just became a big fan of his.
Fill me in.
He was in this movie called The Irishman that was really, really good. He was in this movie called Big Game with Sam Jackson. But you would, he's one of those guys, you would know his face if you saw him.
Yeah.
Because, you know, a lot of actors, because is it J.K. Sowers?
J.K. Simmons.
Simmons.
Man, Whiplash.
I met him.
You've
got to
watch, and you still haven't watched Whiplash, even though I've told you a billion times you got
to
watch
because
it.
Because I don't watch it to annoy you. Because every time you say it to me, and I tell you I haven't watched it yet.
You would love it though, man.
But I'm gonna tell you something, J.K. I met him in the gym one day, and you know, you hate to bother people when they're in the gym because that's annoying. Because you're in the gym to work out, and I talk to people, but I had to say hello because he's one of the great actors that you will ever see. And same thing with Ray Stevenson, but shout out to J.K. Simmons too. But he's still alive, obviously.
Okay, you don't want to interrupt somebody when they're working out.
Yes, you don't. That's rude. Okay.
But it's fine for you to interrupt somebody in a steam room and try to get their bracelet.
First of all, let's get something.
First of all. It's fine for you to interrupt somebody in the steam room.
Excuse me. When you're in the steam room, you're done working out.
You're just sitting there. Interrupting somebody.
No, you're not. No, first of all, no, I didn't interrupt. He was doing nothing.
Just mind your own business in the steam room, will you?
You're sitting right by people. You got to be social. You don't just sit there like a lump on a log. See, that was just rude, but that's okay, America. I'm used to it. Been dealing with it for 23 years now. But, and last, and definitely not least, Matthew Perry. I never met him, but my daughter knows every Friends episode verbatim.
Really?
Like, I have even no idea why she still watches. I mean, like, why? I always laugh. Like, she doesn't do as much now that she's a mom, but she would watch every episode and she'd recite. I was like,
she'd know the lines before they were delivered.
Yes,
as
and
you
I'm
watched.
Like, if you already know the lines, why are you watching? But she loved it. And man, I didn't know Matthew Perry. I think I met Courtney's from Birmingham. I met her quite a few times. So my condolences to Courtney. Courtney's always been great the few times I met him. Most people don't know she's from Birmingham. And I actually bumped into Lisa Kudrow one time in the elevator. And I just, like, hey, just a huge fan. Don't want to bother. She was awesome.
Did you ever watch Friends?
Excuse me?
Did you watch many episodes of Friends?
I've never watched Friends.
But you've run into everybody who was on the show.
Two people. But I've never watched Friends. Ernie, I was busy. I don't have time to just sit around and watch television. I was busy doing
it. It's a half hour of your day.
During their heyday.
It's a half hour of your day.
But I'm like getting ready for games, traveling, things like that. One of the great all-time shows.
It's on TBS every time you turn around.
Oh, I want to shout out TBS too. Thank y'all for getting Modern Family. I can't wait to start watching Modern Family. Arguably one of
because you were on it once.
No. Yeah, it was an honor to be on it. But arguably one of the five greatest shows ever.
It's good.
It's great. It's not good. It's great.
No, very clever.
Very clever.
Well written. Well acted.
Yeah. And I love the diversity of the cast. So shout out to TBS for finally. We've always had. I love Big Bang Theory. I mean, we can only watch Law and Order so many times. I mean, damn.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, I pretty much know every Law and Order episode by heart.
Kind of the way your daughter knows Friends.
Yeah, but I don't say the words in advance.
Oh.
I don't say the words in advance.
That's the difference.
That's the difference.
Great.
So
is that it for first of all? That was an interesting first of all. Still to come, Draymond Green and Dusty Baker.
Oh, yeah.
Wow, how about that for a one-two punch?
They've had some good careers, them two,
yes,
right?
Yes, sir. We are back inside the steam room. Happy to be joined by Draymond Green of the Golden State Warriors.
You think we can get a Kia? Come on, I'm act like Kenny now. You know I already got a kid.
Yes, I know you do. You talk about him all the time.
Yes.
Draymond, the Warriors out of the gate, 3-1. And you're back in there, played the last two games. How you feeling?
First off, thank you guys for having me. Always a pleasure to work with you, too. But I feel really good. Just trying to get my legs back underneath me. It's always tough when you miss training camp. You know, then you get out there and the game's moving a million miles per hour. You're trying to keep up with guys who's already in game shape, who's had training camps, who's had several preseason games. And then trying to jump into that can be a little tough. Needless to say, it's been fun. And I just got to work my way into game shape.
You know, you guys, when you came back, that moved CP to the bench. That had to be weird for him. Have you guys had conversations how the best way to address that?
I think it's weird for him in the sense that he's coming off the bench for the first time in his career in 19 years, which is absolutely insane that you've never come off the bench, not one single game. That's impressive. But I don't think it was weird from the standpoint of as if it was an elephant in the room. I saw CP talked about it a couple of days ago. I had read it where he talked. We had a meeting with the six starters, if you will, before training camp even started. And we spoke about this day coming, about how, hey, we got to figure out who's the starting lineup. We're going to have to figure out who's the closing lineup. Some nights it may be different. One night it may be me not in the closing lineup. Another night it may be Wiggins not in the closing. Steph and CP, whoever it is, and guys have to be willing to sacrifice that. So I don't think it was weird from the standpoint of as if it was a shocker. You know, if it's a shocker, I mean, Chris Paul had a right to be pissed off, but it wasn't a shocker. It's something we talked about, and we're all willing to sacrifice whatever we have to make this team great and try to win.
You know, we had you guys on opening night. We were doing the show from Denver. Chuck, can I relay to Draymond, unless he's already heard, what you had to say about the Golden State Warriors on that opening night?
When he said we cooked?
No, he said, well, cooked was one
I
word.
I said that in the playoffs. And I said y'all were cooked in the playoffs,
Draymond. And what he also said, Draymond, is y'all may be the fourth best team in California.
That's crazy.
Wait,
he's been saying that for years, though.
Dre,
you said it.
I meant it because I said, man, this team, one thing that comes with success, and Dre knows this, man, when you play for the championship as many years as they play, it taxes your body. And all I said, they got an old team. And that's not no news. They got an old team. And I said, man, them other three teams in California, Paul and Kawhi, they're well-rested. The Lakers got a deep team, and Sacramento got a bunch of youngsters. I says, the Warriors, if they have any injuries, they could be the fourth best team in California. And that's not a knock. That's because of their success. They got an old team.
All right. So your reaction to that, Draymond?
My reaction to that is, you know, we the fourth best, the eventual champion may come out of California if there's that much talent in the state of California, if there's that many good teams in the state of California. But, you know, I don't mind that. I think, you know, old sounds a little harsh. Old sounds as if, you know, we look like Chuck when he was out there with the Houston Rockets. That's what old kind of sounds like to me.
Hey, that's what old was.
Yeah.
I would say, no, we are experienced. There's no secret. We're getting up there in age. I think CP's 38, Steph's 35, I'm 33, Clay's 33. You can't deny that. Our ages are getting up there. And saying that, though, we are experienced, and I think the most important thing, to Chuck's point, is us staying healthy. If we stay healthy, which I have no doubt that we will, we got the best performance staff in the league, and we stay healthy on our way, then teams are going to struggle to beat us because now you have to know how to win. And I think last year when we look at our team and losing to the Lakers in the second round, aside from all the chemistry issues, that team just wasn't a team. Aside from all of that, we also didn't have enough variety. We couldn't score in a bunch of different ways. Now we can. You know, you bring in CP, that adds a totally different layer to the offense. So, no, I think I agree with some of Chuck's points. We are definitely getting older, but that ain't never stopped us from winning.
That team just wasn't a team. What was the chemistry problem? Who was the cause of the chemistry problem?
Well, I think there was always an elephant in the room with the stuff that happened in the preseason. There's no denying that. And quite frankly, I think,
did you guys ever get over that, Dre?
And so that's actually where I was headed next. It was like we kind of never moved on from it. And so if you never move on from something, then how do you even grow? And that team just wasn't tight enough to handle adversity. You're going to go through adversity throughout the course of this 82-game season plus playoffs. Adversity is going to hit, and the team has to be tight enough to handle that adversity. We weren't tight enough to handle that adversity last year. I think this team that we have this year is built for adversity. We're built to handle adversity, and that'll be important for us moving forward.
You know, I said last year going in, I said, listen, I know Dre, Steph, and Clay going to do their thing. Looney going to do his thing. But it was really going to come down to the young guys. Kuminga, Wiseman, Moody. But I'm gonna stay with Moody and Wiseman. Obviously, y'all have moved on from Wiseman. Were you surprised your young guys have not come along faster?
I would say what is coming along faster. You know, we're starter year three for those guys, and JK is taking a huge step forward. Several steps forward. Moses is taking a huge step, several steps forward. So I think the way that they both started the season off, that's what you want to see from a third guy going into a third year. When I look back at my third year, I was coming into the season. I hadn't played a ton. We were switching coaches. I played 12 minutes a game during the preseason, and then David Lee got hurt. And so I don't view those guys as, oh, man, they've come along slow. The reality is, when they get screwed, they're judged based off of Kuminga being a 7th pick and Moses being, I think, a 14th pick. And so they're lottery picks. They're judged off that. Well, guess what most lottery picks get to do? They get to go to these teams where they get to shoot all the balls. They get to play through their mistakes. No one's over their shoulder if they're shooting terrible shots or turning the ball over. They're letting them learn through their mistakes. You get two guys that come here as lottery picks, and they come on a team that has guys who won multiple championships and still trying to compete for championships, and they're expected to uphold a championship-level standard. Mm-hmm. And so they're judged off a standard based on playing on a championship team. And then you got guys out here their age that's judged off a standard of if they can get 20 points on 23 shots. And so I think the standard is just totally different. Now, when I look at these guys and you see the ball they're playing this year, they've benefited from those last 2 years because they're learning how to play winning basketball, where some guys in their class are just up there hoisting shots and just wasted 2 years. So I don't necessarily think their development has been slow. I think it's been exactly what you'd expect if you're trying to put two 19-year-olds on a championship-level team and ask them to compete and produce at that level.
Hey, Dre, are you excited about the in-season tournament?
Ernie, I am excited as hell about this in-season tournament. I think it's absolutely incredible for our game. I saw the league rolled out the course the other day, which I think is absolutely incredible. I always speak, and I've heard you guys share some of the same sentiments about Adam Silver being the best commissioner in the NBA. There it is. Now, every team has another court for this thing. The possibilities that brings when you start talking about BRI and different things of that nature. And it can continue to increase the revenue. Absolutely amazing. You look at this in-season model. It's like European soccer. It's like European basketball where they play for all these different cups during the season. Now you take a random Tuesday game in one of these cities that you can't get up for, and that game matters now. You know, and we're playing for hardware. So I'm excited about it. I think it'll bring excitement to the season. As an NBA fan, I'm happy to see it. But also as a player, I'm happy that we'll get to bring this to our fan base continue to grow this beautiful game that we all have the opportunity to play.
You know, you look at the All-Star game, it's going back to East versus West. You think that's good? Or because I personally, I've suggested this for 5 or 6 years in a row. I would love to see the United States against the world. I think that would be a fabulous All-Star thing. But are you at least excited about going back just East-West?
I'm actually not against that idea of United States against the world. I think the only problem is that is you then have to put more world players in. If they're not, if they don't make it, then you can only get 12 tour players from the United States. I think that makes it tough. And saying that, I am excited. Number one, I heard this morning that San Francisco actually got the bid and it's coming to San Francisco in 2025. So I think that's dope. But also going back to East or West, I think it's incredible. I think, you know, when we look at the history of the All-Star game, it's East and West. It's when you look back at all those battles that you guys had over the years, when those incredible All-Star teams and incredible All-Star games, it was East versus West, and you got to take pride in that. Maybe there need to be some added as far as like, oh, this team gets home court advantage if you win an All-Star game like they do in MLB and stuff like that, if we want to make the All-Star game more. Another thing that I think, Chuck, and where we made, and I would love to know how it was for y'all, but I think it was different. With the amount of media attention that's around the game today, there's so many more things that you have to do leading up to the NBA All-Star game. So you get there at 1 o'clock for a 7 o'clock game and you're doing all of these things, media, pictures, this thing, that thing. Then by the time you get to the game, it's like, oh, we got to play a basketball game. So I think the setup, it's been tough for guys to get going. You know, guys got whole game day routines that they go through to get their body ready. You don't get to do that for an All-Star game, and then everybody wants you to go out there and play hard. So I think there are some changes that can be made to get the All-Star game back to the level that we want to see it at as basketball fans. But, you know, in saying that, East versus West is definitely one of those changes that I think should be.
Hey, before we let you go, James Harden's a Clipper now. So what's your view of L.A. as a rival in the Western Conference, a team now that has Kawhi Leonard and Paul George and Russell Westbrook and James Harden?
I think, you know, when you put those names on paper, that they'll be as good as any names you can put together. You know, you're talking 4 first ballot Hall of Famers. What is that? 2 MVPs, 1 Finals MVP, a perennial All-Star. You can't put much else better on paper than what they have. And with saying that, they're also getting older, just like us, to Chuck's point. You know, you got, I think all of those guys are probably in year 14 or 15 or above. You know, and so with the exception of Kawhi's clay year, so it's 13. Like those, and so health will be important as well. You know, you hope to get to the end and see everybody healthy and may the best man win. But they'll be a tough team. They got, you know, a lot. And even around those guys, you know, they still got Zubac. They still got Norman Powell. Mm-hmm. Still got Bones Highland. You know, they still have
through PJ some PJ depth. Tucker in on that deal too with
I know
with Harden. Yeah,
absolutely. You got PJ Tucker, so they still have depth. And then they also have an incredible coach in Ty Lue. So they'll be a team, a force to be reckoned with. Nonetheless, the one beautiful thing about the playoffs is you don't have to go through everybody. So depending on how the schedule lines up, you got to beat the 3 teams that they put in front of you from your conference, and you got to be 1 team from the Eastern Conference. So that's our viewpoint, vantage point. We're ready and willing to take on whoever that is that gets in our way and ultimately to reach the goal that we want to reach.
Your first in-season tournament game is Friday at OKC. Their first game in the in-season tournament. What group are you in? It's not A, and it's not B. It's Group C.
Okay,
okay, who you got? OKC.
OKC. Us. San Antonio.
Yep. You're playing them tomorrow night.
Sac.
And yeah. Anthony Edwards. Minnesota.
Okay, yes, Minnesota.
There you go.
That's a lot of young talent.
Yeah, no doubt.
Sacramento and the Warriors are going to be favored in that. Sacramento and the Warriors, that's the game.
Sure.
Yeah, heavily.
OKC.
Hey, SGA. Chuck, so I got a question for you. You talk about our old age. Do you think that bodes us well in this in-season tournament where we are healthy?
Oh, yeah. I think it in-season, I think your age shows up later in the season. Like, everybody's in great shape and healthy when the season starts. And then I think I tell people, I say, when you get older, you get around 35, 40 games, and then there's so much stress in the playoffs. I think that's why I favor young teams the longer the season goes. It doesn't get easier. It gets harder. But to in fairness to Dre and the Warriors, man, they've had so much success. So much success. And when you go deep in the playoffs every single year, it takes its toll once you get 33, 34, 35. It does.
Hey, Dre, we appreciate you, man. Thank you. Thank you so much.
I appreciate you, fellas. Well, always a pleasure.
All right, boy. Be safe.
You're always welcome in the steam room.
Yes, you are. You're always welcome in the steam room.
All right, man. Later.
Thank you all. I appreciate it.
You got it. We welcome you back to the steam room.
This is awesome.
Where, I mean, you would be hard-pressed, Chuckster, to find a guy with a kind of resume in Major League Baseball that matches that Dusty Baker has.
It's
as a player and a manager.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like,
we call him a manager, not a coach.
Yeah, I know that now. But, like, it would be great to have his resume as a player.
Yeah.
And now you factor in his resume as a manager. It's unbelievable. And we got him on his first episode of the Steam Room.
Yes, sir, in season 5. And Dusty Baker joins us. It is so good to see you. You are you look really happy, retired, Dusty, at the age of 74.
Yeah, Bernie, I don't know what retirement is. I'm still packing, trying to get back to California. I'll let you know in a couple weeks. People like, how's it feel to be retired? I've been retired like 3 days, you know what I mean?
Exactly, exactly. So how much are you watching the World Series?
Oh, yeah, I always watch. You know, I like watching sports. I like watching ball. You know, I watch basketball, I watch football, I watch almost every sport that there is, you know, on TV. And, you know, once sports gets into your veins, I mean, you just don't pick and choose, you know, what to look at. I mean, sometimes in life, in the real world, you miss that adrenaline rush and of being in sports, and you know that kind of like lures us all back into paying attention to not only your sport but the other sports.
You know, I got a question. Like, you had Ernie was saying a little bit earlier that you had one of the most amazing baseball careers. When did you get the bug? I want to be a manager. Something had to kick in.
Divorce kicked in. That's what happened. You think I'm kidding? Al Campana has said some things that, you know, we weren't qualified to do this and that and think a man's position in sports. And at that time, I was getting divorced. And all of a sudden, baseball come looking for some minorities to disprove what he had said. And at the time, I was at the right place at the right time. Myself, Cito Gaston, Hal McCray, and Don Baylor, we were there all at the same time. And so I went to Texas. I went to Dallas for the winter meetings, and about 15 of us walked in, Frank Robinson, Hank Aaron, Curt Flood, some of the baddest dudes of that generation. They invited me to go, Joe Morgan. So I went in there, and Al Rosen asked me, did I want to, you know, was I interested in coaching? I said, no, man, I was a stockbroker at the time, and I didn't want any part of the game. And so I asked my dad, I said, well, Dad, what should I do? He told me, go to the mountaintop and pray. And I went to Lake Arrowhead, and I was checking in this hotel, me and my brother, trying to make up my mind. And the owner of the Giants tapped me on the shoulder, and he says, Dusty, you need to come join us. And I went to the phone, I asked my dad, I said, Dad, is that a sign? He said, son, that's a sign that you don't want to see. And he says, even before you said your prayers, the Lord tapped you on the shoulder. And so, like I said, okay, I moved back to Northern California, got divorced. And then Al Rosen said it would take 5 years to get the player out of me. And 5 years in the day, I was named the manager of the Giants. So that it kind of chose me I just agreed with it.
How long have you been in baseball total?
Oof. Charles, I was thinking about that. Well, you know something, since I was 18, and then I was out a year as a broker at 87. I missed 6 years at three different times, you know, three. I was out 2 years without even a job offer. So since 18, I've missed 7 years out of baseball. And you know, I actually made more money as a manager than I made as a player.
Yeah.
Welcome to my world, Dusty. Welcome to my world now.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Charles, I ain't mad at you, because I'm telling you, you know, people don't know. I mean, you know, the money that we made when I first came into this game, Charles, the minimum salary was $15,000. And you know, you can't do nothing on $15,000. That's why I had to go sell cars down in Augusta, Georgia when I was in Atlanta. I sold cars in the off season. I worked for Atlanta Life. I sold life insurance, another winner. You know, back then we had to work to make ends meet. And then I played winter ball three different years to try to help my mom and daddy out and brothers and sisters that were in college. So, but it taught me some valuable lessons. It taught me how to take care of things, take care of business, and take care of yourself and your family.
Let me say this too, Chuckster. It always seemed surreal to me anytime I would sit in Dusty's office when I was, you know, when I do play-by-play on our TBS games. And, you know, we spent 15 minutes in a manager's office. It always just was so surreal to be sitting across from this guy, because all I could think about was tagging along with my dad at the ballpark at Atlanta Stadium back when this guy was playing for the Braves and hitting behind Hank Aaron. And just to be walking around with Dusty Baker and Ralph Garr and Hank Aaron and these guys was just, you know, it was a dreamlike thing as a kid. You know, you're sitting here, you know, with your forearm on the batting cage watching these guys take BP, and then to be able to be working and calling his games, it was always so strange and so wonderful. And part of that is just, Dusty, it's just gratifying to see the career you had, man. And it's just, so many baseball fans were happy for you when you won a world championship as a manager. And it all kind of came full circle for you. And there was really nothing left, although you tried again this year to do it. But what told you, you know what, enough's enough?
Well, you know, actually, speaking of Ralph Garr, to go back, I was with Ralph Garr yesterday. He lives here in Houston.
Really?
Yeah, honest. And I'm going to be with him today. And then somebody sent me a thing that I had done in 1973 with Ernie. Not with Ernie, not with your dad, with Mytel Hamilton, an interview that I did in 1973. Yeah, it's all over the internet.
Man.
And so, anyway, you know, the thing about, I kind of had made up my mind a little bit during the winter in January while I was packing, because see, it was a lot easier when I was managing in the town where I lived, because all you did was pack for spring training. And then, you know, you came home and then packed for the road. But, you know, when you live in a different town than when you manage, you got to pack for 8 months. And you got to pack warm stuff. You got to pack cold stuff. You got to pack shorts. You got to pack everything. Suits.
Dude, I hate packing. I hate packing for any trips.
I'm telling you. And see, that's what I've been doing the last 3 days, packing now to go home. And then when I go back, I got to unpack. And sometimes you get tired of, you just get tired of being away from home. And see, and I haven't been home since February the 10th. And, you know, I got a nice place. I just got two new dogs right before I left, 4 months old. And my dogs, when I get home, my hun dogs, they won't even know me. They'll probably be growling at me. And I'm like, hey, man, I live here. And I take your butt to the vet and I clean up after you. And so, you know, that kind of, I start thinking about it. And then, you know, we had a lot of success here, Ernie, and then, and Charles, and in the last couple months here, you know, wasn't very pleasant because we weren't 10 games ahead, and you spoil people. They think you're supposed to win this every year running away, and it's not like that. You know, every year is different, and, you know, there was a whole bunch of like criticism from 30-year-olds and bloggers and tweeters, and I'm not doing this and I don't know that. And I told my wife, I said, you know, I'm kind of tired of this and tired of the scrutiny. And if I could like, you know, if I could go manage, show up at like 6 o'clock, or say 6:30 for a 7 o'clock game and leave 30 minutes after the game, don't do the pre and post stuff, I could manage for another 4 or 5 years. You know what I mean? But after a while, you just get tired of just, you know, answering questions. You get tired of just, you know, and then you, not to mention, you know, like I had to have my pacemaker replaced this summer. I didn't miss any time. You start thinking about your health. You start thinking about your kids. You start thinking about, hey, man, you know, how much, and you see a lot of your friends dying and you haven't even really enjoyed your, you know, your life away from the game. And so you factor all that in and you start thinking about it and you're like, okay, you know, Lord's been good to me. I've been away from home a whole bunch. And then I really start thinking about those grandchildren. I got, you know, two grandsons, two and four. And so
don't even get Chuckster started on grandkids, man.
I don't want to see my own boy play.
Yeah.
See, my own boy's in Triple A now with the, you know, with the National. Yeah. So Charles, go ahead, man. I want to hear about these grandchildren. Cause see, I knew you and Mo before y'all was married. When I met Chuck at the Warwick Hotel
in Philly,
yeah. Right?
You know what's crazy, Dusty? You know, two people I really listen to about things are Clark Kellogg and Ernie Johnson. And I get the pleasure of working with those guys. And they're like, because I don't, you know, not a lot excite me. I've had a lot of exciting things in life. So not a lot going to make Chuck excited and go crazy. And I'm like, yeah, I'm excited. It's going to be fun having grandkids, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, no, you don't understand. It's going to change your life. I'm like, dude, I told you I'm a little bit excited. It's going to be all right. And man, little Henry is 16 months. And little Charlie, she's like 6 months. Dusty, it's the greatest thing ever. It's the greatest thing ever, man.
You changed diapers?
No, I didn't say it was that good.
man.
I don't change no diapers, man. Hey, Dusty, there's shit in the diapers.
I was going to say if you was going to tell a lie. Okay, so.
No, I'm not going to tell a lie. Hey, I got a question for you. I sent you a text when Mr. Aaron passed. What did Hank Aaron mean to you?
Oh, he meant everything to me. I mean, he is the reason I signed. You know, there are a couple of turning points in your life. And my parents had just gotten divorced right before I graduated from high school, the same way that I got divorced after I got out of pro ball. And Hank promised my mom, they flew me and my mom to L.A., and he promised my mom that he would take care of me as if I was his son, if I had enough confidence in myself to sign a pro contract and be in the big leagues by the time my class would have graduated from college, to go ahead and sign, if not, then go on to college. And then he promised my mom I'd go back to school, which I did in the wintertime. He promised my mom he'd make me go to church. He'd make me like get up and eat breakfast and, you know, all the make me quit hanging out all night, which I was couldn't wait to do. And, you know, he just took care of me. He took care of me and Ralph Garr. We were over his house every day and they fed us. You know, like he would chastise me, you know, if he thought I was doing wrong, you know, he'd get in my butt. But, you know, he was remained such, you know, until he died, you know. And his wife, Billy, you know, whom I met when they first started dating after he got divorced. I just talked to her a couple of days ago, and Hank has a 2012 or 2016 BMW with 13,000 miles, and she wants me to have it. You know, she wants me to buy it. I'm gonna buy it and leave it before my son to drive in spring training.
What did his 715th home run look like from the on-deck circle where you stood?
Yeah, where I stood, you know, he used to tell me all the time, you know, he'd say, man, this guy's going to throw me a slider away or he's going to throw a fastball up and in. He's going to do this and do that. And, you know, he didn't have no laptop to go look back on. I mean, he had it all in his brain. I mean, he knew every pitch, every windup. He knew. I mean, this guy had total recall. He taught us total recall about you know, things in the game. And he said, okay, he's going to throw me this. I'm going to get it over with. I'm going to hit it out of the ballpark. And I said, okay, Hank. You know, he wasn't predicting like Ali, like he was going to knock him out in the third round. But he knew always what he was doing. And, you know, he was always in control of the situation. And, you know, Barry Bonds is probably as close to, you know, the Hank Aaron type attitude and outlook on the game as I've ever seen.
Why did Hank call you Daffy?
No, it wasn't Hank calling me Daffy. Satchel Paige called me Daffy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Satchel Paige, you know, in 68, I was September call-up, and nobody knew how old Satchel was. He was trying to get the, you know, he had to get 4 years on the pinch and then to get fully vested. And I think he needed like 2 or 3 months. And so I was his caddy. And so, I'd carry his fishing poles, fishing rods. I'd carry his suitcase. And he promised me he's going to give me some fishing rod. He never gave me nothing. And, you know, he's like, hey, Daffy, go get my – I said, look, man. I didn't say man. You know, he was older than me. You know, I was taught reverence. But I said, Satch, please, my name is Dusty. He goes, Daffy, I know what your name is. So I just answered to Daffy. Because, you know, back in those days, everybody, you know, they give you a nickname whether you like the name or not.
Right.
You don't, right, Charles? Them old dudes, they give you the nickname.
Yeah. Most of you call me, hey, Fathead. I'm like, who's he talking to?
I was going to say, Fathead.
Yeah, yep.
So, Fathead, you got some more stories?
You know, I'll tell you this, Dusty. I started calling Moses Dad, from probably my fourth or fifth year in the league, because he took me on his wing and made me lose 50 pounds and made me the player I was. He was like Hank was to you, Mr. Aaron. I'll never call him Hank. I call him Mr. Aaron. He was like my Mr. Aaron. And a bittersweet moment for me, I saw Moses Friday night at the Hall of Fame. And every time I told him, I said, Dad, I love you, man. Thank you for everything. And Moses did like, son, I love you too. And then he died. That was Friday night. And he died that Sunday. Man, it was, and I tell people, one of the worst things I've had to do in my life was doing a eulogy at his funeral. It was so tough. But I got a chance to tell everybody what he meant to me and how much I loved him. Because, man, if it wasn't for Moses, I don't know where I'd be today.
Right. Well, the same for me. And you know, one of the worst days that I've had, you know, like today, it's my brother's birthday. You know, he was a basketball player, got cut by the Warriors. And he passed 4 years ago. He was a manic depressant. That's why I give so much food to the homeless every day. I give food to the homeless every day because we got a big homeless problem here in Houston, big time. And one of the other worst days beside my dad and mom passing was when my wife came in that morning and woke me up like 6 o'clock in the morning and told me that Hank Aaron was gone. And I just couldn't believe it, you know, and, I know we're all going to pass over, but it still doesn't make it any easier. And I'm just glad that I had as much time to spend, you know, with the Hammer as I had.
Indeed.
Who's the best player you ever played with?
The Hammer.
Yep.
And then the second best player nobody knows was Reggie Smith. Reggie Smith could do everything. He was second behind the Hammer, and the best player I ever managed was Barry Bonds.
Best pitcher you ever faced?
J.R. Richard. J.R. man, gave me the blues. I'm talking this guy. Man, this guy would strike me out 3 times, and he was my buddy. You know, you never was buddies with the pitchers. He strike me out 3 times in Astrodome and then come around and pick me up by the bus so we can go out. And I see him coming in his car, and I try to hurry up on the bus, and he like, hump, 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 hump. You saw me get in the car. And I'm like, man, I don't want to get in the car. He said, dude, the game is over. I said, over for you. It ain't over for me. I'm still mad about them 3 strikeouts. You know what I mean? So JR was definitely, he gave me the blues. And Raleigh Fingers gave me the blues, too. I mean, man, You hate when a guy got your number, Charles.
Yeah.
Who had your number, Charles? Who had your number?
Popeye Jones. I hate Popeye Jones to this day. For some reason, Shaq talks about Big Country. Big Country had his number. I have no idea why Popeye Jones, he kicked my butt every single time. And I was like,
yep.
I was like, yo, man, I don't know what I can do. This dude just owns me. But there's somebody who owns you, no matter what sport
that's
you
right.
are. Yeah. And there's somebody you own.
And it's not necessarily the best player that owns you.
Which player did you own? Which pitcher?
Probably Tom Seaver.
Really?
See, you would think it might be the other way around.
Yeah.
Where you might say, well, the toughest guy I ever faced was Tom Seaver. He's got all the credentials. He's the Hall of Famer.
And I see Popeye Jones now on the sidelines. He still got them ears sticking out there. You know what I mean? I know when I see him. But, you know, I remember asking Hank Aaron, I said, Hammer, who's the toughest guy you ever faced? And he told me Sandy Koufax. So I said, really? So I got to know Sandy Koufax when I got to the Dodgers. And I asked Sandy Koufax, who was the toughest that he ever faced? And he told me Bad Henry. And that was Hammer's nickname.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, how can both of y'all say each other? But that was just how much mutual respect that they had, you know, for each other.
You know, I got a chance to have dinner with Sandy Koufax a couple of years ago because I had a bucket list. One of my mentors is Billy Cunningham. He's awesome. And we were playing golf one day. Well, I guess I had watched a baseball game. I says, yo, man, I was watching a baseball game. Sandy Koufax is on my bucket list. I never met Sandy Koufax. You know, because you want to meet these legends. Like, when I met Mr. Aaron, actually a friend of mine who worked for the 76ers became his personal assistant. And I says, hey, and he treated me great. I probably met him 10 times, and it was like royalty every time. Billy Cunningham says to me, you want to meet Sandy Koufax? I said, I would love to meet Sandy Koufax. He said, well, you know, we went to school together. I said, what? And we went out to dinner. We went out to dinner in Philly about 3 summers ago. And it was so humble. He was so humble and so nice. And like when you meet somebody like that and they're so awesome, you just like, man, that was worth its weight.
It changes your outlook on how you treat people.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And so, and I tell people like Sandy Koufax, Lou Brock, and Hank Aaron were the most three humble superstars in baseball that I ever met because I never heard them brag. You never heard them talk about anything that they did. Yeah, I mean, you know, if I was Hank Aaron, I'd be just walking around telling people I was the baddest dude in the whole world.
I say that exact same thing about Wayne Gretzky and Tom Brady. They're the GOATs in their sports. Every time you meet them, they make you feel like they're like normal. And I'm saying to myself, you do know you're Tom Brady, right? That's what I'm saying under my breath. But Tom and Wayne, if you're saying the same thing about Mr. Aaron and those guys, it just makes you feel good.
I never heard them brag. You know what I mean? Never.
Hey, we've talked about or mentioned your son, Darren. People will remember back to the 2002 World Series. Chucks, you remember this?
Oh, yeah. JT Snow. I remember
that. Scooping up your son at home plate in the middle of a World Series game. So how much do you have to talk about that? And when did you realize what had gone on there, Dusty?
Well, you know, he didn't, you know, he doesn't even remember that because he is 3 years old.
But and, you remember it.
Yeah, well, I remember it because, see, I believe in having those kids in the dugout, you know. You know, it's like having a kid on the set, actor, have his kids on the set. And plus, I found out I had cancer that December before the season started. And then I had a prostate operation. And so I didn't know, you know, if I was even going to live. I'm telling you the truth, the most scariest moment in your life is when they tell you you got cancer and you can't believe it at a young age. And so I was going to try to give my son everything I could before, just in case, you know, I didn't make it through that. And right before that game, my mother, she calls me. She goes, Dusty, I got a bad feeling. And I said, here we go. So I said, what, Mama? He says, well, I don't think he should be the bat boy tonight. I said, come on, Mama. He's done this like 20 times. She goes, no, listen to me. Well, when he almost got run over, I said, oh, Lord, I'm going to hear from him, mama.
Uh-huh.
So I get back in the clubhouse and the phone ring, bling, bling. I said, oh, I ain't answering that. So I pick it up. Dusty, I told you, you don't listen to me. Yeah, listen to your mom. I said, mom, I got to go because I said, the press is coming in here. She goes, oh, no, you tell that press to wait. You will hear what I got to say. And you know, when your mama get on you.
Oh, yeah.
Man, she don't, if you're 52 or if you're 12, it's the same thing. But that's something that, you know, they changed the rules because of my son. But, and I'm just glad that, you know, he loves it, fell in love with it then and sticking with it and trying to make his mark on the world.
Yeah, I saw that he brought the lineup card out at a spring training game. He brought the lineup card out for Washington, and you were at the plate. What was that moment like for you?
Well, that was pretty cool. I mean, that was really cool. I mean, and see things go full circle. You know, he graduated from Cal, played baseball over there, and, you know, him to bring the lineup card out, Davey Martinez arranged it on the other side. I didn't even know it. I just saw, man, who's this kid bringing the lineup? Then I saw him because he wasn't in big league camp. And, you know, that was – and we trained at the same stadium where I started my career at in West Palm Beach with the Braves.
Wow.
It's a different location, but we share a stadium with the Nationals. They go to the right, and I go to the left. And he actually told me, he said, Dad, I want to be here. I'd like to live with you during spring training. And I'm like, really? Because, you know, I love my daddy, but I don't think I can live with my daddy. Tell me when to come in and what to do and everything. Yeah, I said, you sure? He goes, oh, yeah, Dad, I want to live with that. I said, okay, no dishes in the sink. Okay, no towels on the floor. You got to make up your bed in the morning. You know, you got to have a – Chuck, you know it's tough having a dirty roommate.
Nothing worse than that.
And so I said, I ain't have no dirty roommate, son or no son. So he was pretty good about it. And then he brought the lineup card out. And then he hit a grand slam off us to beat us.
Really?
In that team. Yeah. A pinch hit grand slam. And then he's looking at me coming around third. I'm like, man, I ain't looking at you. And so everybody in the dugout was like, hey, man, I didn't know whether to clap, have my head down, or what. Because, you know, my pitcher just gave up the, you know, the winning grand slam to my son. And so when I got him home that night, he goes, Dan, how come you didn't even look at me? I said, what was I supposed to do, jump up and down? I said, because my pitcher was feeling bad. But that was a special moment for us.
Last thing.
I got to ask him a serious question first.
Okay, because mine's not serious.
Okay, yeah. Let me ask a serious question. You know, with your success in Cito Gaston, same thing in every sport, lack of minority coaches. What can be done to make sure more guys, more black coaches, get an opportunity to be in UNC those shoes, winning the World Series?
Yeah. Hey, Charles, that's a great question because I've been trying to answer that question for 20 years. And, you know, you cannot make an owner hire anybody. You know, you can put guys in front of them. But there's certain pressures sometimes that from their country club, from their this or that, or the Kiwanis Club or whatever. I really don't know. First, you got to have guys in the pipeline. You know what I mean? In order and to be hired, most of the time you have to have somebody like I had Al Rosen. You know, you got to and Peter McGuire. You got to have somebody white that's not afraid to trust you with his club, you know, because if you're waiting on somebody black to hire you, they're no black owners, you know, so you got to have somebody that's not afraid and also trusts you as a person, trust your leadership, and willing to give you some, you know, some time. See, most of the time, Charles, we're going to inherit a bad team.
Yeah.
You're going to inherit a last place team. I mean, me inheriting Houston, it was a first place team, but man, we had more problems when I got here than the law allows. So, you know, there's always something. Most of the time, you're not going to get no first division team that's going to let you, you know, I look at Doc Rivers or in the NBA and some of the guys that I see, the you know, Sacramento Kings. I mean, You know, there's a few, but we need more. And I'm hoping that the better I do, the better Cito Castro does, the better Dave Roberts does, especially in baseball, which is more conservative than basketball. I'm hoping that opportunities come and really the scrutiny, the social pressure and all that seems like it doesn't really do any good.
Last thing, and that was a great answer, by the way, your memories of the first ever high five, because you were part of it. Because we'd seen low fives, but never a high five until you and Glenn Burke, right, in L.A.
But you know, Ernie, Glenn Burke invented it. Everybody gave me credit for it. I hit a home run off JR. I mean, he was my nemesis. Reggie Smith told him I was going to hit it off him on Thursday. I said, Reggie, he don't need no help striking me. So I ended up hitting a home run off him. And then Glenn Burke was on deck. And then Glenn came up and threw his hand up. I just hit his hand. I swear, that is how the whole thing started. I don't know. I heard Magic said he thought he invented the high five. You know, Magic invented everything. You know what I mean? Boy, Magic. I don't know, Ernie. I was just doing, you know, something. This is off subject a little bit, but you know, one of the greatest texts I got upon retirement was from Snoop Dogg. And, you know, I heard from Snoop, I heard from Trey the Truth, I heard from Wall wants to send me a, Paul Wall want to send me a grill. Can you see me with a grill on, Charles?
No grill.
And that's what I said. So, man, what I look like 34 years old walking around with a grill? I put that grill in my pocket. Go spit it.
Hey, man, I just want to tell you this. You know, one of my great friends who passed away was Joe Morgan. He said he called his dad the day he was going to meet Jackie Robinson. He said, Dad, what do I say to Jackie Robinson? He says, just say thank you. And from all the brothers out here, man, I just want to say thank you. As a player, as a manager, the way you carried yourself all these years, thank you for being you.
Well, thank you. And you know something? Sometime when I'm in a game and I'm having a tough decision to make, I'm talking to Joe Morgan, Hank Aaron, Kurt Flood, you know, Al Kaline, some of these greats of the game that came, you know, before me, because Joe was one of my mentors that I could run stuff by, and I knew that I'd get the truth. And that's great that you mentioned Joe Morgan, because see, a lot of these guys that have come and gone, and you know, people forget about them. You know, I think about the Willie Stargells and Willie McCoveys and all these men. So I had some bad. I came in contact with some bad dudes along the way. You know, even you know Bob Gibson, who I was scared to death of, the only man in the world I was scared of other than my daddy. And you know, I'm like, man, these cats. You know, they helped mold me, and my dad, like he told me, he said, son, I said, Dad, what do I do with this? He said, son, it's not yours to possess, it's yours to pass on to somebody else. And so this is just what I've tried to do.
Dusty Baker, you're one of a kind, man. We appreciate so much you taking such a big chunk of time to talk to us here
big
on
chunk
the steamer.
Of time? He ain't got nothing to do.
Oh, come on, man.
It's 24 hours. It's 24 hours in a day. What the hell he got to do? He got 23. Hey,
Dusty, you know where I was coming from, man. I was sincere, Dusty.
Dusty, I'm not sincere. You got 23 and a half hours left. So good luck with the rest of your day.
Okay, man. Todd, you kill me. Hey, man. Oh, man.
Welcome to my world, Dusty. Welcome to my world, man.
I love you, man. Be safe.
Later, man. Thanks, Dusty.
All right, Dusty. Man. I'll see you down the road.
All right, kid.
Hey, what a good dude, man. What a great life.
Great stories.
Because, you know...
How about a guy who can talk about Hank Aaron and Satchel Paige?
Willie McCovey.
Yeah.
Willie McCovey.
Hey, Daffy. I know what your name is.
I mean, when he says Satchel Paige, it reminds me when I'm playing golf with Gary Player. He'll be like, I was talking to Nelson Mandela one day. I says, are you serious right now? He just, like, skipped right by it. I says... He said Satchel Paige. When Gary Player say Nelson, President Mandela, he's like, wow, history. Thank you, Dusty Baker.
Chuck and Ernie in the steam room. Come and join us in the steam room. Chuck and Ernie in the steam room. leave your towel on in the steam room.
Chuck and Ernie in the steam room. Chuck and Ernie in the steam room. Leave your towel on in the steam room.
Just occurred to me, Chuckster, that I didn't tell either of our guests today, Dusty Baker or Draymond Green, to keep their towel on.
Well, you're entitled to a mistake. Yeah. So this is the first call of the new season?
First answering machine?
That's a call, fool.
Yeah, the first answering. Well, it's we don't call the segment the call. We call it the answering machine.
You know what I meant when I said first
call.
And
you know what I meant, too. Didn't you? Okay. You're just trying to be difficult.
No, I was just... Okay.
Why don't you give folks the number to call? For the answering machine. What's the number?
404?
Yes.
Ernie?
No.
What is it, Ernie?
404.
Yes.
987.
987. 1065.
Zero.
Okay, that was close.
404-987-0330. Not close at all, as a matter of fact. Let's see what we got.
Hello, world. This is Charles Barkley. Leave me a message.
Hi, Ernie and Charles. It's Paco again. The 18-year-old from Hong Kong currently studying in the UK. Still a loyal steamer since 2019. For someone who isn't from the US and hasn't grown their own brand yet, your words about not holding on to your own baggage, not caring about what other people think, meant a lot to me. I can't explain the amount of times I've looped that clip. It's insane. My question for you guys today is about networking. So I've built some connections already. I've had great interactions. But how can someone with as little credibility as I do, as little publicity as I do, get over that hump? Much love, guys. Thank you so much.
Wow, that is that's a tough question from Paco.
What I love the question about, like, people's Rudy Tomjanovich was great to me when I was in Houston when I couldn't play anymore. He was always great to me. But he always talked about, Chuck, only control what you can control. Anything else is excessive baggage and just going to stress you out. The only person you can control is you. Can't get mad at this guy, that guy. You have to control your own. And that actually frees you up. To piggyback on his first part of the question, like, it frees you up. Because if you spend all your time worrying about other people's crap, you would go crazy. But the only person you can control is yourself.
Right.
But to get back to his question about networking, man, you have to keep trying. I remember reading about J.K. Rowling's. She sent that Harry Potter book. She got turned down, I think, 15 times before it became the biggest book in the world. And I was just thinking about that when she was on, I forget what show she was on. This is way back too, before the Harry Potter books exploded and became the biggest thing in the world. But she says, yeah, 15 people turned me down. 15 companies turned me down before somebody took a chance on it. So when it comes to networking, a guy asked me that question last night. I said, the number one thing you have to do is surround yourself with good people. Because for me personally, every conversation starts like, Chuck, I got a way we can make a lot of money. And I was like, yeah, that's a red flag right there for me.
But it's going to take a lot of my money.
It's going to take my money
for us
to make money. And if we lose it, I'm the only one losing money. So I think the main thing, you have to make sure you surround yourself with good people and, like, take chances. That's all you can do.
Yeah, and for somebody like Paco, who's young and trying to get in the business world and doesn't really have... can't surround himself with good people to do this and that. Yet it's just a perseverance thing too. And being unafraid to reach out. I mean, here's an example. Like last week we're in Denver doing that show and we had, the big crowd behind the set.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those college kids, we were doing it on a college campus there. And after one of the halftime shows, one of these college kids just kept trying to get my attention. I said, yeah, what? And said, I've got to write a paper for my marketing class, and I've got to interview somebody, and I'd love to interview you. Can we do that? And I was like, When do you want to do this? I have to do it before November 20th. So tomorrow I'm doing an hour-long Zoom with this student.
That's awesome.
And you never know who is going to say yes to something like that.
Yeah.
You know, and so when you have opportunities and, you know, keep sending things out. I mean, it's
the worst they can say is no.
Or they can ignore it. Or every now and then you may get a response. Yeah. You know who's one of the greatest of all time? It's like Doc Emmerich, you know, the great hockey announcer guy, who would spend a big chunk of his summer just analyzing young people's hockey tapes.
Wow.
And he would encourage him and he would give out his number. And he said, here's what you need to do. And here's my email address. Send me your video.
Wow.
And he would do it.
So, I met him. It was like meeting royalty.
Yeah. So it's doable, but you got to really, really, really stick to it and not get bummed over maybe not getting the results you want right away.
Oh, you know what? I forgot something too, Ernie. When I was doing, first of all, I want to give a shout out to Barry Melrose.
Yeah.
You know, I've always said this. I think Barry Melrose was the best guy on television in his hockey analysis. And, man, I just want to give him and his family the best. I know he announced his retirement from public life because he's got, I want to say, Parkinson's.
Yeah.
And, man, the few times I met him, man, what just an awesome guy. Loved hockey. And people know how much I love hockey, but I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the great Barry Melrose. I sent him a text and just tell him, man, thank you for being the best and thank you for loving sports. So shout out to Barry Melrose.
You got it. Next call.
Hey, Tuck and Ernie. This is Lawrence Christ III, the 2023 Oscar Pope Lift Every Voice Fellowship recipient and senior at Northwestern University. I just wanted to call in and thank you both and express my gratitude for the impact both you had during opening night, my fellowship, and even the tips you all gave me. I mean, one that really stood out to me was during the second game, we were in the green room, and the first thing Chuck said to me was, you got to relax out there, man, and about my interview with Aaron Gordon. And it was crazy. This was a real moment to me because, one, this is Charles Barkley speaking to me, but also he was talking about my interview and helping me get better at my craft. So I appreciated it because, you know, although you complimented the job I did, you emphasized a key part in interviews that treat interviewers or interviewees like it's a conversation. And I think that's something I've noticed brings out even better answers for players and makes them even more comfortable. So thank you both again for making opening night so special for me. And if I have to leave a question, I want to go back to opening night. There was a python to you all's necks. And of course, you all's reactions were priceless, but what would it take for you all to allow the snake to be on your necks for 5 more minutes?
Look, I wore that thing and it was, I figured this snake handler is not going to put this snake around my neck if there was any chance things were not going to turn out well. So I was like, okay, fine, put it on me.
And then it started constricting.
Well, it didn't really. I think maybe the guy was messing with me.
I don't think so. Because I was sitting there. I was standing there. And I was like, I think that thing is starting to constrict. Because he started going up.
Well, he was. Yeah, I know.
He was kind of
looking at me.
But no, he started going up. Uh-huh. Not that I'm a snake expert. I'm like, oh, it looks like he's getting ready to. Then right then, the guy came over. I said, he was getting ready to constrict.
Okay.
I mean, and let me tell you something. I would have laughed my ass off if you had to just choke the life out of you live on television.
Wouldn't that have been something?
It would have been
great.
That
would have gone viral.
We would have got some, you know, some views, as they call it.
Yeah.
That would have been views. But a young man, number one, shout out to Oscar Pope. I think it's great what TNT does.
With the Lift Every Voice.
Yeah. Lift Every Voice. And Young Gun, hey, man, you got some talent. You just got to work hard. You know, people ask me about that all the time, and I said, hey, man, just relax. He was so uptight. I said, no, man, you got to relax. Because
he did a good job. He did a great job with the interview, but I'm thinking, too, look, Chuckster, and I'm thinking back to my TV career.
Oh, yeah.
If I were a senior, when I was a senior at the University of Georgia, if they had put me on a national broadcast of it and said, hey, interview this guy, I would have been
nervous too.
and that's beyond nervous.
Yeah, and that's all I'm saying.
He did great.
He did a hell of a job. Yeah. But like I say, I'm glad he took it like, yo, just relax a little bit.
And
brother,
that's the way, you know what? And that's always my advice too to journalism students who I talk to all the time. Be your own worst critic. And if you're going to ask somebody what they think,
yeah,
be prepared for, hey, relax more.
Yeah.
Or you need to do this. And it's constructive and it's helpful.
Yep.
It's maybe not what you want to hear, but it's what you need to hear. Yeah. So take it in the vein in which it is given, because it's going to make you better in the long run. But Lawrence, great job, man.
Great job, man.
Great to have you as a teammate.
Continued success.
Yes. Do we have another one, Cap? Last one.
This is Randy from Long Island, and I thought I'd just give you a little poem since I remember Ernie doing it one time. Longtime listener and loyal steamer, I just love my guys Ernie and Chuck. You balance entertainment and wit with care for those down on their luck. Charles, first of all, and number one, I just love it when a song you unfurl, because then I know, without a doubt, I'm the second worst singer in the world. I also respect your maturity, for you've grown greatly over the years, and I so appreciate your antics, like soap bar size, that brought me to tears. Ernie, you're excellent at your craft, the anchor in your colleague's storm. The show's vessel is safe in your hands. When they are crazy, you are their norm. And thank you for your book, Unscripted, for it gave much on which to grab hold. And for your wisdom about your mom, for mine passed away 1 year ago. Most of all, you're a great man of faith. With compassion, your heart is furnished. If your life has taught me just one thing, it's the importance of being earnest. Thanks, guys. Love you. Bye-bye.
Wow. That was good.
That was
good.
That was very impressive. Thanks for taking the time to do
that. From Long Island.
That's awesome, man.
That is awesome.
Appreciate
the
kind words.
Loyal steamer.
Yeah.
You know, man, we've had so many great calls like that. And, you know, when we first started doing this podcast, I thought it was the stupidest thing ever. And I'm going to tell you something. Now I really look forward to it. And because of the people, number one, the guests we have are incredible. But when we get calls, I mean, I'll never forget the soldier who was like, hey, I'm going through PTSD, but you guys lift my spirits. The one lady who started walking, listened to our podcast. She had just gotten fired. She says, you know, I was so depressed when I got fired. And I started listening to y'all podcast, just walking every day. Like, stuff like that just brightens my day.
Yeah. No, yeah, and we look forward to another season of that. And, you know, what's funny, Chuckster, it's like, over the summer, you know, our buddy, Ben Spitalnik.
I don't know.
Oh yeah. Okay. So,
oh, the little short, ugly
but
dude.
Ben's like, oh. You on board for another year of the steam room? It's like, of course.
Yeah.
Oh really? Oh good. It's like, of course we love this. We love this.
It's awesome.
This chunk of time every week.
Ben should go as Halloween like a troll, because he's about the same height as one of those little troll things. He just like put some like kind of makeup.
Ben, I'm sorry I brought you up as part of this conversation.
Oh, it's my fault he's short.
I would have spared you.
It's my fault he's short.
This stuff from the Chuckster.
Well, is my fault he's short?
No.
Okay.
But it's your fault that you attacked him.
I just gave him a great Halloween costume idea.
Anything else here on episode number one?
I cannot wait for Ben to hear this.
I cannot wait for episode number two. I bet if Ben knows that number, 404.
Oh, Ben.
987-0330. Ben may just be calling in the Chuck's answering machine.
Hello,
next week.
Ben.
Great seeing you again, big guy.
Yes, sir, brother.
All right, see you on TV tonight.
Look forward to it.